They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today is an old friend, Tom DeWeese. My regular listeners have heard him before, and you're in for a treat because Tom has just written a book called Sustainable, and it is amazing. It's the rest of the title is The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuals. Tom, you're amazing. With all the work you do, you actually manage to sit down and write a book.
It surprises me, too, when I do that. But sometimes it just pours out of me. So, yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that this did pour out of you.
I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Sue. Good to be with you.
So you've been working on this book for a while.
Yeah, it started out to be like a 35-page booklet. As I got into it, I thought, no, it's got to be more than that, and it ended up taking me almost a year to pull it all together. But now we finally got it out. And by the way, I thank you very much for your contribution. I have one whole chapter on homeowners associations, and appreciate your input on that.
Well, I wish I had done more. I find it very difficult to know where to start. There's just so much information, and if you don't put it all in the right context, people don't understand what you're talking about. You just leave too many questions.
Yeah, no, I get that, and that's what I tried to do with Sustainable, is start from the very beginning and tell why property rights are important, why they matter, and then go into detail about how they're being attacked and how they're being diminished and absolutely eradicated across the country, and what the programs are behind that and so forth. That's what the book is about. And then working on what to do about it, which is the hardest part, in fighting it. I've got some suggestions and things we're working on to try to do that, to try to restore property rights and the prosperity of people in our country.
Well, let's start with chapter one then. It's prosperity, stability, freedom. Why private property matters? Can you tell us why private property matters, Tom?
Well, private property is the means for individuals to not only have their home, place to live, you know, store their stuff, have the family there, but it's also one of the only means for the average individual to create prosperity for themselves, to build some kind of wealth. You don't get wealthy working a job. That maintains your life, but in most cases, I mean, there obviously are exceptions to that, but for the most part, the average person going to work and getting a paycheck every week is not building wealth. The average individual can build wealth is equity in our homes. And most Americans will buy a home, keep it for several years, and then sell it, and they'll make $100,000 or more, maybe much more in certain cases. And that helps them build, you know, their personal wealth, and then they can buy a better place and they can keep building like that. But you know, if you don't have the ability to own private property, this is one of the reasons we have teeming poverty in many countries around the world is because they don't allow people to own private property. And they have absolutely no ability to get out of that poverty and move forward. And so, this is one of the major reasons private property ownership is the reason that the United States became very wealthy very fast over a lot of older nations because we had this ability to own private property.
And so there are some people, I mean, you've been talking about the ability to keep it. You reminded me that the association industry has floated the idea. I mean, they're a $90 billion annual industry that they get in fees from the homeowners, and that's $90 billion less in your pocket. But they have floated the idea in the past, and I hope it's totally dead, that when you sell your property, that they should get a portion of the profit that you've made, because after all, it is because of the HOA that you built that profit. Are you sitting down? Have you fallen off your chair yet?
Unbelievable. I mean, homeowners associations are the very definition of socialism, of somebody else telling you how you're going to live on your property, what you're going to do with your property. And always under the, I love it, I know you know this well, the excuse is always that, you know, to keep up property values, that you know, we have to have all these uniform, one-size-fits-all regulations on everybody. And, you know, obviously that is not necessarily the case, but you do end up with, what I always say, you know, convention of busybodies who want to tell you how you need to live. We don't like the way you live, so you're going to have to follow our rules. And there, out the door, there goes the property rights. And it's just diminishing, absolutely diminishing private property ownership. And once you begin to do that, and what we're seeing across the country as these kind of assaults are taking place against private property, is the nation is becoming less prosperous. Everywhere you turn, people are suffering, they're struggling. And one of the main tenets of freedom, one of the main pillars, is private property ownership. Free enterprise is another one, and individual liberty is the third one. Those three pillars are the pillars of prosperity, of freedom. And if you take one of those pillars away, their freedom begins to diminish. So does their prosperity. So does their wealth. And that's what we're starting to see in this country, particularly the attack on private property. People are getting poorer by the day, and you have no hope. You have no ability to move forward. You have no ability to make decisions on your own. Everything is decided by somebody in a back room.
Somebody sent me or posted a link to an article from New Mexico on my Facebook page. And in the story, it was a nurse who bought a townhouse because she thought it was easier to maintain it. And the back of that, I don't know how new the townhouse was. It sounds like a lot of construction debris that had just been thrown in the back. And she spent decades, clearing it out and putting up a fence with permission, mind you, and putting down stairs because there was a big slope. And she went to work someplace else. She was a night nurse, and she went to take care of patients. And when she came back, her fence was gone. So they came on private property and took private property because they thought they had that right.
Yeah. This is what we're seeing across the country. Nothing is safe. Nothing is sacred. And, this force, who is this association? Who are these people? Are eventually they're going to get their own army? You know, they're going to put in the field to control. They actually kind of have it now, just like you just described. This is what happens. And eventually, when you oppress people to that point, it's just human nature. People give up. they stop producing, they stop trying, and you know, eventually what we're going to see is the end of private property ownership in this country. And, you know, government control, government dictating, I don't care what level, and I'm using Homeowners Association as well as government, because that's what they consider themselves to be. And, you know, at every level, this is happening. And, you know, John Locke talked about if, you know, John Locke was the gentleman who really influenced our founding fathers. And, got them to, you know, to really understand private property and so forth. And he talked about that if private property does not exist, then the incentive for an industrious person to develop and improve the property would be destroyed, and that, you know, if you would then deprive that industrious person of the fruits of their labor, and what would come from that are marauding bands that would confiscate by force the goods produced by others, and that mankind would be impelled to remain on a bare subsistence level of hand-to-mouth survival because the accumulation of anything of value would be attacked. It would invite attack. You've got something over there. We want it. We're going to take it. Isn't that what a homeowners association does? Is it not a marauding band that comes in and confiscates the fruits of your labor?
It is. I think they're the tools, because the real beneficiaries from all of this are the local municipal government.
Yeah, they use it to you know, take care of things they don't want to do, which is down on the local level. They have much higher you know, callings that they have to handle. So down on the street level, they've created these homeowners associations. And
yeah, but they still collect the taxes, and the taxes that were designed to take care of the street level type of issues. So they've
absolutely
created this additional level of government. Somebody called it a shadow government. I don't call it a shadow. I think that they've just created this. It's out there, and guys, you can do anything you want, because you can use the homeowners' money to take them to court and then just run them out of money so they just roll over and play dead. But the thing is, Tom, there's more of us than there is of them. Why is it that people are not standing up and saying, all right, that's it, fellas? This is the end of the road.
I think the reason, the answer to that, is that people have forgotten what private property rights are. They believe, you know, private property ownership is paying the taxes and paying the mortgage, and, well, we have a place to live. And they don't think about it beyond that. It used to be that you would say, cross my property line, you're trespassing, and you're going to suffer the consequences to it. Don't trespass on my property. And law upheld that you were, you know, able to protect your own property. Today, that kind of attitude is looked upon as violent and nasty, and we shouldn't have such a thing. And so, you know, the people aren't, I mean, if you have an intruder who breaks into your house with the intent of doing you harm, and you protect yourself by shooting them or doing some other damage to them, they can file a lawsuit against you for violence against them. And win. You know, I guess you've damaged their workplace. I don't know. So, you know, this is the insanity that we're dealing with. And now we have the whole social justice movement that says property ownership is a social injustice because some people can get wealthy off of it while others don't. And so that's racism. This is the new thing that we're hearing now with this. But the bottom line is the drive is on to wipe out private property, that people shouldn't own private property, that government should be the ones that make the decisions. It is incredible that in a recent magazine article that William de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, said, he was interviewed by New York Magazine, and he said, in talking about trying to put in all of their planning and all the controls that they want to put in property. He said, what's been hardest is the way our legal system is structured to favor private property. I think all people all over the city of every background would like to have the city government be able to determine which building goes where, how high it will be, who gets to live in it, and what the rent shall be.
That's exactly what's happening.
That is their attitude.
That's exactly what's happening, Tom.
Yep.
That's exactly what's happening. Fairfax County sits there with their master plan, 10-year master plan. It doesn't matter if there's a house in the middle of it. You know, they're just going to remove that because it's a bad use of property, of land, and they're going to rezone it. And if you don't move, what they will do is tax you based on what they think your, you know, what they think they will be collecting in taxes if your house wasn't there and they had built all these condos, these high-rise luxury condos. And so you have to pay those taxes. It's economic warfare.
Yeah, it is. And they're finding now is they're building these high-rise condos in all the communities using eminent domain to wipe out single-family homes, and everything is based on living in these high-rise condos. And of course, then they talk about mixed use, and you know, you've got subsidized housing and so forth. Well, so many communities took these grants from HUD and other agencies for fair housing, for subsidized housing, and now they have to maintain that. They have shortages of this kind of property, and communities like Seattle, Washington are now putting on a construction tax on new buildings to help pay for the subsidized housing, which they no longer have money for. You know, all you hear is this march toward more and more and more government controlling the housing and putting landlords out of business. When they start to tell a landlord, you aren't allowed to ask a potential renter if they can afford your property. And now they move in and they don't pay the rent. And the rent, and then the property value goes down, the property is in disrepair and so forth, and the landlord's not even allowed to ask a question like that. The first thing you get are fewer landlords, and you're going to have fewer housing choices. And more, now government has to move in to build more housing. And in these communities, in inner cities, where you have ethnic neighborhoods, you have low-income neighborhoods, you do have people living there in property that they own. You do have people there who own small mom-and-pop businesses and so forth. But the city council sits there surrounded by these planners and these non-governmental organizations putting all this together. And they come up with this plan, and they get the federal grant, and they move in with eminent domain, and they bulldoze all of that, and they build these high-rise condos and all their walkable communities. And now the people who lived there before can't afford to live there. And what becomes of them? They are now forced into subsidized government housing, of which, and on welfare programs, from which there is no escape, because nobody can get out of it once they get into that trap because of the way the laws are set up. This is what we're facing today, and they call that smart growth. This is what we're dealing with today.
I read an article, or I saw something about the people in California. I mean, this golden state that everybody seems to think is so wonderful. They're putting people in boxes in people's backyards. So if you own a house with a backyard, you're going to get a new neighbor who's going to be living in a tiny little box at the end of the garden. And that's because they...
This is what we ran into. We run into across the country. Portland, Oregon, of course, is the poster child for it all. But, you know, the word you hear now is urban sprawl. We can't have urban sprawl anymore. That damages the environment. So we're going to put growth boundaries around the city. We're going to put a line around the city, and we're going to say no growth goes on outside of this line. Now what happens when the population starts to grow? Exactly what you're describing. First, if you have a single-family home, Now they're going to do that to you. But eventually, they're going to ban single-family homes, and they're going to demand apartment buildings. Eventually, those apartment buildings have to be replaced by the high-rise apartment buildings. And then, when they've gone as high as they can go, what do you do then as the population continues to grow? Then they have to make the apartments smaller and smaller and smaller. Eventually, you end up with a bed and a sink and a refrigerator. No, that's a prison cell. That's a,
no, it, it
this
is.
This is where we're headed with this.
It is.
And, you know, the incredible thing about it all is that the American Planning Association, which is the number one planning organization in this country, they live off of these grants, and they are in almost every single community putting these plans together. A few years ago, Shu, they decided to do a study to make sure their planning was working. They wanted to make sure what they were doing was working. And they put this report together, and incredibly, the last paragraph of their report from the American Planning Association said this, quote, "The current planning policy strategies for land use and transportation have virtually no impact on the major long-term increases in resource and energy consumption. They generally tend to increase cost and reduce economic competitiveness. In many cases, the socioeconomic consequences of less housing choices, crowding, and congestion might outweigh the very modest CO2 reduction benefits." In other words, it doesn't work. It doesn't matter. There's no reason to be doing this. But that doesn't stop them. They keep doing it.
Well, there's a lot of money in it, Tom. Somebody was telling me there's a tremendous amount of money in it. And we, the housing consumers, the homeowners, the people who need a dwelling somehow, someplace, are the ones who end up paying for it. I was told there's some phenomenal percentage of every new house goes towards government permits and all of that. So if you buy a house for $100,000, then probably about $40,000 or $50,000 of that goes to paying the government for permits to build the house. And then you've got the developers and the builders' profit margin, and then you end up with whatever you're paying, whatever you end up with. I mean, it's not costing anywhere near as much as you're paying for it. And so you're still...
That's right. And you know, then you get the banks involved who, I mean, isn't it really outrageous the amount of interest money a bank makes on a mortgage loan?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, the 30-year mortgage loan, you go the first 15 years and hardly pay anything off on the mortgage. I mean, that is outrageous. It costs you, you know, as much in the mortgage payments and in the interest payments as it does in the you know, the full price of the house.
Yeah.
And then on all
much
that,
more
of course,
so
you have the taxes and everything else that comes out of it.
Much more so. You'll end up paying three or four times as much as the the price of the house by the time you've, you know, if you stick to the 30 years and you pay what, you know, pay this whatever it is you're supposed to be doing, you can add to the principal and reduce it a little bit that way, but most people don't. You know, they just keep paying the same thing over and over and over again, and you know, the banks are quite happy, and miss a payment, they'll take the house, no problem. And
this thing of putting liens on it the way they do so quickly, the homeowner associations do that as well. You know, one little infraction of the rule here or there, they control it now. And you have to scramble hard to get that lien off of there if you even can. And sometimes they don't even tell you they've put a lien on. You go to sell the house, you find out the lien's there. Oh, you got to pay this before you know, you can get rid of the house.
Our Virginia legislators have given associations the power to foreclose non-judicially to collect any alleged debt that you owe. That debt can be a fine of $50 for having a dusty mailbox. They can fine you. They don't have to send you a letter or a fine or anything. They can just put it on your account and then foreclose without ever explaining to a judge why you deserve to lose your house. They can go on the courthouse steps and just auction it off. Away we go.
Again, this is the attitude that we're dealing with, that private property no longer exists. And, you know, it goes back to the Kelo decision in 2006 when the Supreme Court, made this decision. When this case was brought before the Supreme Court, no one thought Suzette Kelo would lose that case, because every precedent, every judgment beforehand, every statement by a founding father, everything said private property rights are sacred. And so, but along comes this Kelo decision. Here you have Pfizer Corporation, which had said to this community in Connecticut that we want to build in your town a big new facility there. And the community, county commissioners, whatever, get together and they say, or city councilmen, they say, oh, well, we're going to, let's take this neighborhood right over here. This is perfect for it. And they start using eminent domain to take the property. And, talk about, tyranny. They would browbeat one homeowner into agreeing to sell their property to the community at a very, very reduced rate, I might add. And they immediately brought a bulldozer in and took that house down. Then they moved the bulldozer next door, mm-hmm. facing the next house,
yeah.
and they started on them. And then they got them to submit, and they tore that one down. The place became a war zone, unlivable, and the intimidation was incredible. Suzette Kelo stood up and fought all the way to the Supreme Court, said, I don't want to give up my property. This is my house. And incredibly, she lost the case. The Supreme Court ruled that if a community can use property for its own purposes, even a private project. For example, and this was an example given by one of the judges who opposed this, if you had a Motel 6 and had the opportunity to replace it with a Ritz-Carlton, and that meant more money, more taxes, and so forth for the community, well, that was okay then. Pity the guy who owned the Motel 6. You know, this is what happened, and people were shocked by this. They said, why in the world would the Supreme Court rule this way? I think still I'm the only one to really come out and say the reason they did it is because they had to, because the only way that you can introduce sustainable development, smart growth programs, all these policies, is by destroying private property. And the only way they could do that, this Supreme Court decision opened the way for them to do that. Now you have, in every single community in this country, you've got developers and builders and city councilmen and non-governmental organizations with their own private agendas and planning groups all meeting behind closed doors and making plans. This end of town we can do this, and this end of the town we can do that. And eminent domain is coming in and bulldozing those communities, and they're the ones making the money off of it, and too bad for the property owner, because they have no say in any of this. That's the bottom line.
I did interview Suzette Kelo and some of her neighbors who were also involved. I mean, she was the lead plaintiff in that case. But I asked her, I was shocked, because I had seen pictures of what was going on before the bulldozers showed up, before anything was settled, and it looked so beautiful. I mean, it was the autumn, and you had the beautiful fall colors and the leaves and the river and all of that. And so when I had her on, I said, would you please describe your neighborhood? And she said, Beirut. I'm expecting her to talk about the natural beauty of the place.
Yeah.
And her response was Beirut. And I said, what do you mean? She says, it's a war zone. It's an absolute war zone. And they come
in. You know what? Chew the bottom line to the story, the final chapter to the story. Pfizer never built that facility, and it is nothing but an empty field.
Yeah, yeah, I know that. They took
government
it. They
took the land.
destroyed everything, and they just destroyed it. I mean, it's so destructive. And it looked like such a peaceful, gorgeous little place, you know?
She loved it. She was a nurse.
Yeah.
And she bought this little pink house, and she just loved the house. She had made her own rugs. She'd done all kinds of things there. She just didn't want to give it up. Where in the world does it come from that you buy something, it's yours, to make it the way you want it to be? And, you know, one of the things, what we run into here, and, you know all the excuses on the homeowners associations, other places around the country where, you know, they're putting these things in place. The example that they always give, if we don't have these plans, if we don't have these controls in place, somebody might put a smelly old pig farm next door to you. That's always the excuse.
Slaughterhouse.
I think that's the most disgusting thing they can think of, and it's always that. And obviously they really hate pigs. But the truth of the matter is that since the beginning of human settlements, we have had nuisance laws. We have had the ability for an individual who has a neighbor who isn't considerate, who has a bright light, loud music, you know, whatever the case may be, smelly pig farm, you know, next door. And, you know, you first of all, neighbors used to go over and say, John, will you turn off that light at night? It's shining right in my bedroom window. Or keep the music down. So I'd say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And you can solve the problem that way.
Yeah.
If not, you could go to court and say, tell John to turn off the stupid light. And the court would say, okay. You know, that's if it invades your property.
Yeah.
Other than that, what they're doing now is putting one-size-fits-all programs in place, right down to the height of your grass and the color of your door. And, you know, private property has diminished, has disappeared because of this. And most of the time, there are two excuses that they use. One is, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to diminish my property rights or my property value. And the other excuse, of course, is the fear of environmental degradation. And so those are the two excuses they keep using. And meanwhile, property has ceased to exist as a private entity.
You know, when you were talking about what the people next door might put on in their front yards, you know, an old toilet. What I say is, if your neighbor puts an old toilet in the front yard, why don't you take some petunias and plant them in there? It makes, you know, beautify the neighborhood.
Yeah, right. Some people do that, too.
Absolutely. Why not? Take some dirt over there, put it in the toilet, plant some petunias in there, and you've solved the problem. You just have a nice plant. I mean, it's not that big a deal, really, when you think about it.
What I've been trying to do is, you know, we really have a great ignorance in this country about what private property is. And, you know, there is a definite, it's not a selfish thing. This is my property. You know, you bought it. You paid for it. You are the only one who really has an interest in it, you know, financially and so forth. And, you know, one thing we know out in the West, not just the West, but in farms, you know, rural areas across the country, the people who are best capable of taking care of property and protecting it from environmental destruction and that sort of thing are the property owners, because they're the ones that have an investment in it. The farmers have got to have that property producing. It's got to be in good shape. You know, they've learned over centuries of farming practices what to do so that they don't damage the soil and stuff. And they'll be the last people to pollute their property. And what happens is the government ends up taking this property, and it turns into a wasteland.
Yeah, it does.
You know, the Emerald Valley in California was created from a desert by people learning how to conduct the water and so forth to make it flow in the right ways. And they built this beautiful place, and farmers could flourish. And the environmentalists just absolutely lusted over that. We're going to get the Emerald Valley. Well, eventually they got parts of it. You know what? It reverted back to desert because of their stupidity. And, you know, they have this attitude that man is not part of the environment. And so now we have man's not allowed to go into the forests and clean out the dead trees, which is kindling on the floor of the forest. And what do we have? forests burning hotter than they have ever burned before, destroying not only more forest land, but also the wildlife that lives there that we're supposed to be protecting. This is the stupidity of the environmental movement, and it is not about protecting the environment. That is the excuse. The scare tactic of the fear of environmental Armageddon is the scare tactic used to take control by government over every action of our lives and destroy the three pillars of freedom, which are free enterprise, private property, and individual choice. And every one of these policies are designed to do that, and that's what they're doing.
You know, you were talking, you were talking about the woods. I've been driving around, and there's so much empty space that's part of the empty space that's required for HOAs, because they just cram you in on these teeny tiny little pocket handkerchief size lots, and then they leave this open space because that's part of your open space, and it's woods and nobody does anything to it, and the trees fall down and you've got all this dead stuff there, and trees falling on power lines which should be buried, but you know, I won't go into that. And I've often wondered why, when jobs were so hard to find, why didn't we let, or why didn't somebody suggest that we allow people to come in and cut down, to get the free wood, all the dead trees that are just lying in state there and have been there for a donkey's age, cut it down, sell it for firewood, start their own businesses. It would save money for the HOAs. They wouldn't have to clean it up. They don't do it anyway. So, I mean, at least you'd have some kind of beautification. You'd give people free access to free products that they could sell and make some money with, and you'd increase the firewood. It's going to burn if it goes up in flames anyway, but why not use it? Why not use what you have and make the most of it? But nah, just, you know, it's just left there.
Let me tell you a story on that issue. Several years ago, well, of course, when the Forest Service began to implement these plans that you weren't allowed to clean that out of the forest because that was natural, you understand. That's the way the environment works. That's just natural. You leave it on the floor. Forget man ever had anything to do with it. And as they, you know, of course, they came up with the spotted owl, the endangered spotted owl, lived in old growth forests, meaning forests that were not cut, not used by the forest industry, or the timber industry. And so this was a ploy to make it so they couldn't cut the timber anymore. There was no shortage of spotted owls. They're part of the Mexican spotted owl. There are millions of them. But the fact of the matter is, this, they used this as a ploy. So now you had whole communities in Oregon and Montana, other states out there that were affected by the timber industry was being shut down, and there were towns that lived off the mills that you know, had been set up in their towns. Here was one town where that had happened, and they were starving to death, and there was a big storm that came along and knocked down a whole lot of trees in the forest. And the guys there in the timber industry and the workers, the you know, people ran the mill and so forth, who were getting ready to lose their jobs, were going to have to leave, and you know, they had no future. They went to the Forest Service and they said, please, let us take those dead trees out of there. We can run the mill for 6 months with those trees. And the Forest Service said, no, that's natural. And I was at a conference where several of these guys were there. They were awaiting trial because what they did,
wow,
one of the guys said, having those trees laying there on the ground like that, rotting away, nobody using them, putting them in front of us, was like a starving person standing in front of a window of a restaurant and watching somebody feed themselves. Said, we just went in and we took them. And they got arrested for doing that. And, you know, then they, you know, served jail time because of it. You know, trying to save their families, trying to save their town. and a government that has no compassion whatsoever, because it has an agenda to put in place, and that agenda is to get those people out of those rural areas, make it impossible for them to live there, and herd them into these smart growth cities where they can now all live in those high-rise condos and be nicely controlled by the government. Does that sound radical? That's exactly what they're doing, and we have gotten more and more. We used to say this all the time, but now we're getting more and more proof that that's exactly what the plan is. That's what it's all about, and that's why they are so rigid, and they will not bend when, you know, just human, just common sense, just human compassion for people. No more. Now it's government control for a very specific purpose.
We are not controllable. We never have been controllable. Why have we allowed this to happen? I mean, I don't understand why anybody would want to do what the government's doing. I just flat don't understand it.
I've never understood the drive for the need for power to rule, regulate over other people. I've never understood that in my own life, and I never had a desire for it. The only reason I'm involved in all these things is they won't leave me alone, or other people.
Yeah.
And I have no desire for the power, but there are people who do. They want to control. They want it their way. And now you're seeing they're driving these mobs into the street now because somebody, you know, is trying to use common sense to do something, to do it right, to make it more prosperous, to help people. And you have these mobs who have been, you know, indoctrinated into this stuff and use of the fear that, they're going to lose what they have if they don't get in there and fight us crazy people who want to protect private property. I mean, I know I'm kind of rambling on that, but it's just crazy that what they're doing. But it's very, what you're seeing is a picture-perfect plan that's being put in place that institutes, top-down tyranny. And they're doing it beautifully.
It's so ridiculous, Tom. It's absolutely insane. I with you, I don't understand this need to control people. And I just don't understand the need to destroy everything, because ultimately that's what they're doing. They're not just destroying it because right now they don't like you and they want to make you suffer. They're destroying it for themselves, for their kids, for their grandkids, for anybody who might come after us.
You know, it was very easy for, you know, in the very beginning, back in the early 1900s, when the Soviets took control of Russia, it was very easy for them to do that because you had, first of all, you had a czar who ruled as all kings and queens do, you had a certain levels, who were the chosen ones and who were the peasants. And so you had people who were starving, you had people who couldn't get ahead, so forth. And so it was easy to come in and agitate, to have the people rise. If you promise these oppressed people that you're going to have equality finally with these rich people prancing around here, you're going to have equality with them and so forth. And so it was easy for them to rabble-rouse those people and get them to rise up and overthrow the czar. And, then what did you get? What did you just describe with homeowners associations? Here you had people who owned homes, their own private homes, and now the government came in and said, you got room for 8 families to live here. You get the back room back here, and we're going to bring all these other people into your family. What's the difference between that and being told that if you've got a backyard, you got to put a box in the back for somebody else to live? That's exactly the same practice.
It is.
What we're seeing happen in the streets today is we've built up all these programs where people are living off of government handouts, and it's bankrupting the country. It doesn't work. It's building huge corruption in our governments, and so people come along and say, this doesn't work, it's economically not feasible, and it's hurting the very people it's being, these people are slaves on this. I'm sorry if I'm using this term, but that's what they are.
Yeah, they
are. If you don't have the control of your own life, and somebody else is controlling every single thing you do, that's what you are. And people who are on this federal dole are stuck there. They have made rules and regulations that won't let people off of it. And, you know, you can't go out and just get a small job and help yourself and everything. If you do that, you lose the government handout and or the food stamps or whatever the case may be. So people won't get off of that. They can't. They don't have that courage to do that. And so now you're seeing people rise up against anyone who suggests this system needs to change. We need to fix this. Now you've got riots in the street over that. And, of course, anybody who owns private property is a racist. It's not fair. It's a social injustice. All of this is being used. It is classic, exactly what the Soviets did in 1910, and they're doing it now in our country. And property is the number one target on it all.
There's something when people do something, create something, build something, accomplish something, there's a feeling like nothing else. There's a sense of pride. And we're robbing people of doing that because we don't want them to try. We're making sure that they fail because we've got this carrot there. And so people just, they just sort of sit there and shrivel away. And they get their food, and they get some kind of shelter. It might just be a box at the end of somebody's garden, but that's not fair. You don't know how much creativity is in that person. May not be a genius, but they may have some creativity that would contribute greatly to the world.
It has become nearly impossible for somebody to just get an idea and start a small business. So many of our small businesses that started in this country ended up becoming very, very successful and employing a lot of people. In fact, this goes back to private property, the equity that people had in their property. 60% of the businesses in this country were started by a homeowner using the equity in his property, and they employed over 60% of the people in the country. And these were ideas, small ideas. And, you know, big, huge government bureaucracies don't think of, you know, the individual little things that make our life better. All they are concerned about is existence. Get by. Be alive today. We have you tomorrow. The idea of luxury is never in any government program whatsoever.
Oh, it is for them. It is for them. They thrive on luxury. It's you who pays for it that you can't have it.
Exactly. But now what we have is a drive for, under sustainable development programs, a drive for public-private partnerships, partnerships between government and business. And unfortunately, we have an awful lot of people who supposedly promote the idea of free markets, who are promoting public-private partnerships as free enterprise. And I am disgusted by these people because that is absolutely untrue. What these public-private partnerships do is create non-compete clauses. That's not free enterprise. That's monopoly. The government gets to hide behind the independence of the business and say, oh, we're not doing that. They are. The business gets the power of government. They get the first, they get the goodies. They get the tax breaks. They get the best locations for their businesses. And they're working together to create all this. The businesses are using their advertising budgets to promote sustainable policies. Listen how many ads are on television day after day after day talking about this is sustainable, this is sustainable. Government doesn't have to spend any money to indoctrinate us to use these programs. These companies are doing that. What you're seeing happen is step by step corporations that are just swallowing up more and more businesses. The day is going to come very rapidly that we have about 10 global corporations in this world, and one of them handles all the banking, one of them handles all the food, one of them handles all the manufacturing, and on and on and on, that they'll do everything. That is not free enterprise. That is a monopoly, and, you know, working with government in that manner is pure Mussolini fascism. But this is the direction we're going in, and you're watching more and more. Every time a bank gets swallowed up by a bigger bank and so forth, that is what's happening. What choice do you have then of the quality of your food or the kind of food you get or the service that you want to get or, you know, anything like that. Now you'll have one price to pay. You know, they control the whole thing. It is not free enterprise. It is not freedom. And we are rapidly moving in that direction.
It's pretty bad. I have a number of people who are in the Middle East right now, friends, people I know. Martha Bonetta is one of them. And the one thing they keep talking about is the food, because so much of that is from, you know, is grown around the Mediterranean. And yet we have supposedly the best controls and all of that, and we have more diseases and more problems, food poisoning problems, with bad food in this country. And the food is not good. I mean, it's just not good. It's not nutritionally sound. It's pretty terrible. But again, it's the government controls. It's all the government controls on there.
Yeah. Sustainable farming is the death of the independent farmer. They've had these rules and regulations on the farmer about how they can grow crops, even what crops they can grow. And this makes it so expensive to do that. And many times it doesn't even grow crops at all. They just cannot survive. And you're seeing farmer after farmer go out of business. I've never met a farmer in my life who wanted to be out, didn't want to, you know, wanted to do anything else besides farming.
Yeah.
And they are losing out. And what's the alternative? Massive corporate farms.
Yes.
And mass production.
Yes.
And, you know, this is where it's headed with this. And what the quality of your food is going down. Tyson's Chicken, for crying out loud,
yeah,
are now shipping their chickens for processing to China and then shipping it back here. How fresh are your chickens? How clean are they? You know, we're not allowed. They have killed one bill after another that where people rightly wanted to be able to label where your food comes from. Now you're not allowed to do that. Why? Because people would stop buying this stuff coming out of these countries where, you know, they have no controls over cleanliness and in their processing and so forth. And you've seen the stories of people getting sick.
Well, you see the more stories of people getting sick in this country with all of these controls than you do people in other countries where they don't have the controls. And you look at it and you think, why is that? What's going on here?
Yeah. It's all about control, it's about money, it's about power. And these corporations, you know, they are not free enterprise. They don't believe in free enterprise. I've heard some of them say they don't believe in free enterprise. They're able to use this control and their partnerships with the government to put their competition out of business.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why they're all grabbing it up. And you listen to them. They're in lockstep with all. I mean, Silicon Valley is just a lost cause, but other corporations across the country are and around the world are doing the same thing. They don't want us to have national borders. They don't want us to have national governments that are making different kinds of rules that they have to deal with. They want all one size fits all. They are the ones pushing for a total top-down global government with one set of rules, so they don't have to worry about it anymore. And
But these fights are coming from all over the place. I've had a number of egg farmers, poultry farmers, who are fighting desperately to keep their little farms and their free-range eggs and, you know, their chickens and all of that. But you have all of these enemies, whether it's the guy next door, you know, there's this war on the family farmer. And you're right. That's all they want to do is farm and feed the world. And they're small. But they're not allowed to do it. I mean, they're not making billions of dollars like a lot of the big fellows. They just want to have good food. So,
yeah, freedom of choice and what we want, you know. So,
okay, for all of you out there, the book is called Sustainable: The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuals. The author is Tom DeWeese. Tom, thank you so very much. I hope you'll come back.
You.
I mean, there's a whole lot more in the book, and we, I think, barely scratched the surface.
I'll tell you what, Shu, we just did something new. We put together a website called whypropertyrightsmatter.com, and on there you can download a little 10-page booklet for free. If you want it printed, you can buy it off there, but you can download it for free that goes through a whole lot of these things we just talked about and gives people an idea what why property rights matter.
So. Sounds good. I'll make sure it's in my promo. Thank you. Thank you so much, Tom. Good luck with all your endeavors. You're amazing.
All we can do is fight.
Yes, we can.
What we do.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.